This is Jordan Secchio. Today on Jay Secchio Live, the whistleblower, so-called whistleblower's attorney. Back in 2017, the same month President Trump took the oath of office, said, quote, "A coup has started, an impeachment will follow." We'll talk about it today on Jay Secchio Live.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
The whistleblower's attorney, Mark Zaid, again in the spotlight this time over some tweets he sent out in 2017, about 2.5 years ago.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
He reportedly tweeted that, quote, "a coup has started," and claimed impeachment will follow ultimately. He also wrote, quote, "I predict CNN will play a key role in not finishing out his full term as president," and then went on to say, quote, "we will get rid of him."
And now your host, Jordan Secchio.
In news you cannot make up, in this world of witch hunts and fake news and fake whistleblowers and fake impeachments and lack of due process, we now have the whistleblower's attorney days after the president took the oath of office. You think they have an animus towards President Trump? Days after the president took the oath of office, the same month, January 30th, he tweets. This is the attorney for the so-called whistleblower, Mark Zaid. The coup, and of course he puts that in a hashtag, coup has started. First of many steps. Rebellion. Impeachment will follow ultimately. Hashtag lawyers. And he is commenting and retweeting a tweet from Jake Tapper about the firing of the acting attorney general, the lawful firing of the acting attorney general, Sally Yates, because she refused to enforce a lawful executive order that ultimately was declared completely constitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court. And she was fired because she put out a memo telling the Department of Justice and the attorneys at the DOJ not to enforce the executive order. So that's where this all starts.
Yes.
This guy starts back in 2017, the same month, within a couple weeks of President Trump taking the oath of office. He's calling for impeachment. He's calling for a violent overthrow of the U.S. government. That's what a coup is defined as.
I think here's what you got to realize. The lawyer could say whatever he wants to say, but it puts the whole context of who the whistleblower is and a clear animus. And when I say animus, what does it mean? There was a bias against the president. And then his lawyer, like I said, he's got the First Amendment right to do it, says coup, says rebellion, says impeachment, says CNN is going to be, as Jordan said, part of this. And now we don't hear anything about this whistleblower. I mean, you notice the whistleblower issue is kind of evaporated, Than, from the whole discussion. About impeachment.
I mean,
there's no more whistleblower. Remember, and whatever happened to whistleblower number two?
There was none.
Well, neither one helps the case, Jay. That's what happened. Look, I mean, the way I look at this is some people use the word resist. Peter Strzok and Lisa Page used the term insurance plan, but Mark Zaid flat out called it a coup. And Jay, I think it's really important for our listeners to really take to heart the timeline that Jordan laid out, because next week, the House Intelligence Committee is going to make the case that this is all about a call with the Ukrainian president. Jay, I'm pretty sure that call was nowhere in the works in January of 2017 when Mark Zaid called for a coup. It's not about Ukraine.
No.
It's about a coup.
It's about, here's what it's about. It's about an attempt to take the president down for the Russia collusion narrative, and that did not work. Then it was an attempt to take the president down on an obstruction of justice narrative involving Bob Mueller's investigation, and that did not work. And what happened there? Bob Mueller ultimately testified, and that certainly did not work. Then what happened? Nothing. They bring one other witness in. Remember that? Corey Lewandowski for about a day, and they realize that's going nowhere. And all of a sudden, the Judiciary Committee no longer has jurisdiction of the impeachment process. Who does? The Intelligence Committee. Why? Because of a conversation, transcript of which has been released, involving foreign policy and Ukraine. You don't impeach a president because you have a policy disagreement.
This lawyer said that the words he used were describing a completely lawful process. The word coup, defined by the Oxford Dictionary, as a sudden, violent, and illegal seizure of power from a government. The exact opposite of something lawful. And Black's Law, by the way, defines it as treason.
There you go. All right, we're going to get more into this. We're going to take your calls at 800-684-3110. Facebook and Periscope, stay with us. We'll be live during the break. Got some updated news for you. Here we go.
Thank you. Planned Parenthood, the largest abortion business in America, is murdering unborn children and then selling their organs. Federal law bans the sale of aborted babies, but the abortion industry is exploiting a massive loophole. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're demanding Congress investigate Planned Parenthood's gruesome practices and close this abhorrent loophole. And we're taking on Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry in a major trial and in multiple Supreme Court cases. We could not mount this battle without your support. Right now, your gift to the ACLJ will be doubled through our matching challenge. A $20 gift becomes $40. A $50 gift, $100. Stand with the ACLJ now in the fight for life. Online at ACLJ.org. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.org.
Jordan wants to give some definitions as we talk about the... So it's a series of text messages. Let's get everybody... Let's reset it here for everybody what we've got.
So Mark Zed is the attorney for the...
Whistleblower
fake
one.
Whistleblower, I like to call.
Yeah.
The fake whistleblower one, because not really whistleblower, because they went to the CAA's top attorney, general counsel first, then went to Adam Schiff before filing a whistleblower report, and now they want to claim anonymity. By the way, everyone knows who this person is. We've talked about that before on this broadcast. It's been out in news articles before. It's been out in Real Clear Investigations. It's put it out. Members of Congress know who it is. Reporters know who it is. Ultimately, this whistleblower that was supposed to be so important was undercut by President Trump in the White House by releasing the transcript of the phone call. The whistleblower only had hearsay information. So what their argument, though, is why can't we hear from this whistleblower in some capacity, especially in these closed secret bunker hearings that Adam Schiff is having? Even there, they can't hear from the whistleblower? I mean, where no cameras are allowed and no recordings are happening. But that's because the whistleblower knows less than all of us when they filed the complaint. Because we all have the transcript now, and the whistleblower didn't. It was based off of hearsay.
Which is called hearsay on hearsay, which would be inadmissible in court.
By the way, the people testifying next week in the first open hearings, there's no indication that any of them were on the call either.
Not on the call.
So they were all getting their information third hand, or one of them was already fired from the U.S. government before the call took place.
Yeah, and then when I think Taylor never had a conversation with the president. This is just kind of what he perceived to be the situation. You realize what they're doing. I mean, they're trying to do an impeachment inquiry, I guess they call it, an impeachment inquiry. On the basis of what? On the basis of something they think might be a policy of the United States. And by the way, policy disagreements are not the basis upon which you have a impeachment proceeding.
Remove a duly elected president.
You don't undo it. Because understand what happens. If you do an impeachment, you are undoing, you are removing from, if there's a conviction, removing an individual, the president of the United States, from office, which effectively undoes the election, and it's an undoing of the election. So I think what you've got to realize is, what is all of this about? And I think what we're starting to see is all of the daylight, as it's shown on this, although, Than, I will say the daylight here is very limited, because even understand next week, everybody, when you see those hearings on Wednesday and Friday, let me tell you who's not going to be in the room. I'm not going to be in the room. The White House counsel is not going to be in the room. The State Department lawyers, I suspect, are not in the room. And if they are in the room, they're not participating. Because this is still a proceeding with no due process. And this retroactive attempt on due process is a violation of the Constitution. You cannot retroactively fix due process when the very last hearing at the very last, and I've tried cases for 40 years, at the very last hearing, at the very last motion, you then said, oh, now your lawyers can participate. That's not the way it works. And Adam Schiff said yesterday, or last week, that he views this more of as a grand jury, except for two problems. He is not a United States attorney, so he can't convene a grand jury. He is a member of the United States House of Representatives. He's conflated his roles here.
And there's no guarantee that any lawyers will be able to participate in the House Judiciary Committee hearings. They've actually said that's up to Jerry Nadler and if the White House is complying. And I could easily see him saying, well, you won't give us every document we've asked for, every witness we've asked for, even if they have a lawful assertion of executive privilege over the documents or privileged documents or the witness themselves. And so guess what? He can then say lawyers can't participate. Also, witnesses. These are public hearings next week. Witnesses have to, from Republican requests for witnesses, all must be approved by Adam Schiff.
Yes.
So do you think any of those will be approved? He might approve one so he can randomly say, I approved, you know, I did.
We approved. No, they're not going to do that.
But he's going to approve somebody random.
But I want to underscore something Jordan just said because it's important from my end as counsel here. Understand, if we assert or if the White House asserts a valid constitutional privilege, executive privilege on involving conversations that a senior person had with the President of the United States about policy of the United States, if you say it's executive privilege, Jerry Nadler, fan, I think people need to understand this, as chairman of the Judiciary Committee, could say that is non-cooperation, and therefore the penalty for non-cooperation, according to the chairman's decision, could be that the lawyers cannot participate, ask questions, or call other witnesses.
Completely at the discretion of the chairman of the Judiciary, and if anybody doubts what you and Jordan are saying, I challenge them to look at page 6, section 4 of the resolution passed by the House. It begins on page 6, goes over to page 7, but Jay, the key line here is that the Committee on the Judiciary is authorized to promulgate additional procedures as it deems necessary. And one other point, Jay, next week as people are watching these proceedings, all those attorneys you talked about that won't be in the room, that's true, but there will be attorneys in the room. They will be working on behalf of Chairman Schiff, and guess what they get to do, Jay? Chairman Schiff can defer time to them. He can give those attorneys time to ask questions of the witness. So apparently what's good for the goose is not good for the gander. Chairman Schiff can have his attorneys in the room to help him out when he gets in a bind.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. So the question here is, Jordan, as you go through those emails, this is the reason the whistleblower is not coming forward and the whistleblower is not being discussed by those leading this charge on impeachment.
Right. The whistleblower is weak. The whistleblower has lack of information. The whistleblower may have gone through the process improperly and Adam Schiff lied about his conduct. I think the biggest reason, the number one reason why, don't believe the sob story. They're so scared for the whistleblower. Adam Schiff lied about his contact with the whistleblower. He started the entire impeachment with a Four Pinocchios Washington Post lie. He lied about his staff's. He lied about his contact with the whistleblower. For all we know, he set this whistleblower up with this attorney. I mean, why not? Because Adam Schiff has been managing this process and lying about it since the beginning of the whistleblower.
Here's what Adam Schiff said about, did he speak directly to the whistleblower?
We have not spoken directly with the whistleblower. We would like to.
Okay, and then when he was questioned on it and called out on it, then he had to come back and respond. Why did he have to respond? He had to respond because, guess what? They did speak to the whistleblower. Here's his response.
Do you regret saying that we, the committee, weren't in touch with the whistleblower?
I should have been much more clear, and I said so the minute it was brought to my attention, that I was referring to the fact that when the whistleblower filed the complaint, we had not heard from the whistleblower.
So
we
you did to. Actually speak to the whistleblower. I mean, this is the irony of this whole thing. I should have been clear. This is the guy that's the chairman of the committee. So we got a whistleblower that may have worked for Vice President Biden. We've got political animus there. The lawyer saying he wants a coup. Jordan's going through the definitions of what that means. And this is supposed to be an impeachment proceeding of the President of the United States. And then nobody hears about the whistleblower anymore. Why do you not hear about the whistleblower anymore? Well, you don't hear about the whistleblower anymore because they're not going to use the whistleblower. Because the questions would be asked at some point in this proceeding, and they'd ask the whistleblower, were you on the conversation? No. So you just heard this from other people? Yes. So it was hearsay? Yes. And you disagreed with the policy of the President regarding how he was handling Ukraine? Yes. And you work for Vice President Biden. Yes. So these are not questions they want to answer. So now what is it going to be? It's not quid pro quo anymore. What is it exactly? What is the grave meaning of this complaint? members of the State Department disagree with the president's approach. They didn't even speak to the president, but they didn't like the policy. You don't impeach on a policy disagreement. And I think that's, you know, fundamental constitutional principles here. I mean, that's not a high crime or misdemeanor. Now, they're going to have three witnesses next week. Than, do we have any idea yet if they're going to call more?
We don't know yet, Jay. I mean, that would most likely be the following week. There would be 1 week left before the Thanksgiving break for them to do it. We'll probably know early next week whether they will or not. But, Jay, I think it's really important for people to understand what you're saying about there being a partisan bias or a policy disagreement and why that can't be grounds for impeachment is so important. Because, Jay, if that is allowed to stand, it will do two things to every future president that ever assumes the office. One, it will put them under perpetual impeachment from the day they take office. And two, Jay, specifically as it relates to the facts of this case, it will keep them from engaging in one of the most fundamental duties of their job, and that is conducting foreign affairs. If this is how it happens, Jay, I don't know how any future president conducts foreign affairs.
Let's go right to the phone.
Yeah.
Glenn calling from Michigan Online 2. Glenn, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, Glenn, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'd like to know Jay's opinion on how long it will be before this process moves to the Senate. And will we get legitimate, open-air testimony for these jerks
What's going to happen in the United States Senate? Let's leave the pejoratives out of this. Okay, so here's what happens. I'm looking at the schedule. We're all trying to figure this out. So I think that Adam Schiff's going to try to wrap his issues up, his intel hearings up, by Thanksgiving. He may or may not be able to do it, which means sometime in the beginning of December, mid-December, it goes. Could go to the Judiciary Committee. Are they going to pull hearings together that quickly to get it to before Christmas so that the Christmas present to the American people is this, you know, articles of impeachment, which is what Jerry Nadler, I guess, would intend to do? I have no idea at this point. But so January, February, it would be in the United States Senate. If it happens, I still am not convinced it happens. Listen, I can't predict. Nobody can. But the fact of the matter is, this is a thin basis, my goodness, to start an impeachment proceeding. To undo an election. It's unbelievable. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. Facebook, Periscope, Twitter, social media platforms, ACLJ.org. Everybody that's watching right now, share this with your friends. You can even start watch parties. We encourage you to do that. Because we're going to give some information during the break. We'll get you some of that information also, of course, when you come back. Got a lot of cases to talk about that involve all this, so we're going to get right to that. Don't forget to support the work of the ACLJ.
Yeah, folks, go to ACLJ.org. We have a matching challenge right now. Whatever you donate is effectively doubled. We have a group of donors ready to match every donation in the month of November. You've got to make that initial donation to activate that. Go to ACLJ.org and donate today.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.org. Planned Parenthood, the largest abortion business in America, is murdering unborn children and then selling their organs. Federal law bans the sale of aborted babies, but the abortion industry is exploiting a massive loophole. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're demanding Congress investigate Planned Parenthood's gruesome practices and close this abhorrent loophole. And we're taking on Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry in a major trial and in multiple Supreme Court cases. We could not mount this battle without your support. Right now, your gift to the ACLJ will be doubled through our matching challenge. A $20 gift becomes $40. A $50 gift, $100. Stand with the ACLJ now in the fight for life. Online at ACLJ.org.
something up during our break. Again, Facebook, Periscope, share it with your friends, radio audience as well. I want people to understand this. This all this, you know, the identity of the whistleblower issue. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the whistleblower's lawyer has come under a lot of media attention in the last 24 hours. Of course, President Trump brought it up at the rally because tweets were uncovered going back to 2017, the same month that President Trump took the oath of office, starting with that, quote, coup has started, first of many steps, rebellion, impeachment will follow ultimately. Then has said another tweet, coup has started, as one falls, two more will take their place, rebellion, impeachment. Talks about impeachment again, another tweet. And then again says, not shocking at all, in a poll about trusting CNN versus trusting President Trump. This is back in 2017. I predict CNN will play a key role in the impeachment of real Donald Trump, and real Donald Trump not finishing out his full term as president. This is literally the attorney for the whistleblower. Now, he's also tweeted a lot of attacks on the president's son, and Republicans in the House and Senate who have said that this whistleblower protection is absurd. There's no law saying you can't name the whistleblower, actually. Now they're trying to rush one of those through. It will not get through both houses of chambers of Congress. But the whistleblower, maybe he's responding too quickly because he's not used to this kind of attention. He retweeted someone who in their tweet has a tweet from Seb Gorka. And in Seb Gorka's tweet is the name of the whistleblower. It says, in the name of the whistleblower's lawyer calling for rebellion. And he puts that out on his Twitter page. So flashing on his Twitter page about five tweets down is the name of the guy he's crying wolf about protecting. And, oh, he's going to be under so much scrutiny and he's so scared, except for you put out his name.
We're not even going to repeat his name, correct?
No, because
we've said it.
His
we lawyers, said what the articles have said.
His lawyer's doing it.
Yeah.
Words matter, and lawyers are supposed to be trained to be very judicious in what they speak. I found his tweet in July of 2017 to be really, really alarming when he said, and this is a rough quote, he said, we will get rid, and he did use that term, of President Trump and his supporters. He, in a July tweet, said he was going to get rid of Trump supporters. That sounds like something Maduro in Venezuela would say about the people who stand up against him. He needs to be much more careful with how he words things. This is not good.
Yeah, all right, let me go to another matter. We've got a lot more on this, so just stay tuned. But I want to give an update, folks, on a couple things going on. So you got all this going on in Washington. Then we got a team of ACLJ lawyers in the Northern District of California fighting Planned Parenthood. That case is going to go to the jury, closing arguments on Tuesday next week. It'll be about the fifth week of trial. So by the sixth week of trial, we will have a verdict in that case. So that's going on. At the same time right now, we are preparing, and a lot of us are on this radio broadcast are involved in preparing it, a major oral argument, they call it oral submission, before the appeals chamber of the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Skip Ash, who heads up our practice group that deals with these matters, is on the broadcast out of our studios at the campus of Regent University School of Law in Virginia Beach. And Colonel Ash, because he's also retired military. But Skip, let's talk about, I think people need to understand, we got a lot of people watching right now that are following this other issue, but they need to know how important, we're standing up for our military here. What's at stake in this case?
Well, what's at stake in this case is the very fact that the United States, as a non-party to the treaty, is nonetheless having its men and women in uniform being hauled before, potentially being hauled before the International Criminal Court to answer for alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity. The normally and customary international law, a state that does not join into a treaty is not bound by any aspect of that treaty. This treaty, called the Rome Statute, is different. It has written in some provisions that allow it to reach out and grab people who are not, who are from states that are not member states. The United States is not a member state, and the prosecutor right now is attempting to investigate and potentially try U.S. servicemen and women who served in Afghanistan for alleged commission of war crimes and crimes against humanity.
And they've also lumped the United States. I want to get this on the screen if we can. This is important here. They've lumped the United States literally with the Taliban. That's in the office of the prosecutor when they look at the various parties that are involved here. I'm going to put that up on the screen as soon as we have it. Let me read you the letter I've sent out today. We have a major announcement about the biggest case at an international court in our ACLJ, and I should say ECLJ, European Center for Law and Justice History. Our brave men and women in the military could be in grave legal danger. The International Criminal Courts, called the ICC, is considering a case that could lead to the prosecution of our soldiers for war crimes over our American heroes' fight in the war on terror in Afghanistan. In less than a month, we will be presenting oral arguments, they call it oral submissions, through our European counterpart before the highest appellate chamber of the judges of the ICC. It's essentially the ICC's Supreme Court. I'm going to be making those arguments. We will be making the arguments in support of the interests of the United States military and our soldiers. I need to point out that the U.S., as Skip said, is not a party to the statute. So the United States is not going to appear. But we are through our European affiliate. The case could have massive ramifications. And because the U.S. has not joined the ICC, the U.S. government will not be, as I said, presenting arguments. We will be the only voice supporting our soldiers. And looking at it right now, Skip, it really looks like that we are the only ones supporting our soldiers, and maybe one other group arguing something similar, but literally about 15 to 2.
Oh, that's exactly right. When you look at the others who have asked to speak and have been given permission to speak, they are all on the other side. They are against the position that we will be promulgating, that you'll be promulgating at that before the chamber. And therefore, it is absolutely essential that the voice of the American service members be heard, and you will be that voice, Jay.
Yeah, well, I say I will be the voice on behalf of all of us, and that includes our entire legal team and all of our members around the country. So this is, look, I mean, this is important. This is important for us to understand. And we closed my letter out saying our military defends our freedoms every single day. Now it's time for us to defend them. I want to go to Colonel Smith on this as well. And Colonel, what's your reaction to that? I mean, we know the case is historic, by the way, and huge ramifications. And as Jordan will tell you and others, I'm preparing for it like every spare minute. Go ahead.
Well, the prosecutor for the ICC is trying to do an end run around their pretrial division, which of course turned this down, and trying to say that
we won in the lower court.
Yes, that's right. Because Afghanistan is a member and the alleged acts were committed in Afghanistan, then somehow they still have jurisdiction, even though the people accused of this, in this case, U.S. soldiers, are not part of a country that has signed on to this. You know, color me a skeptic, Jay, but when you look at the ICC and its 18 judges and the United Nations Human Rights Council and all of these things, you know, they can't be trusted, in my opinion, to be a fair and honest arbiter of justice and human rights. Its purpose, too, when the ICC was first started, their purpose was to try cases from people in countries where there was no judiciary system.
I know, it's called complementarity.
That's right, that's right. And they've gone way beyond that
mission. Way beyond that. All right, so all this to say, that's being worked on now, too. Major case in Northern District of California, San Francisco, going all the way over to argue a case in The Hague in the first week of December. And then we have all this news that we're talking about. So all of that's relevant. We're going to be here for another 30 minutes. You know how it works. If you get SiriusXM, if a lot of our stations carry the full hour, of course, Facebook, Periscope, Twitter, everybody's on there. We encourage you to participate that way. Jordan's going to let you know about our matching challenge. And then everybody stay tuned. Share this with your friends. We got another 30 minutes ahead.
All right, folks. Again, take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Also about, of course, the whistleblower, so-called whistleblower attorneys' coup tweets and predictions on impeachment. And now they're involved directly in impeachment and starting the impeachment. I mean, it's just it's a little bit much, right? When they mock us for talking about a deep state conspiracy. And it's a CIA mid-level agent who started all of this. Exactly what the deep state is by any definition. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. Donate to the ACLJ. Whatever you donate right now, it's double. Because we have a matching challenge the whole month of November. Donate at ACLJ.org.
And Periscope, stay with us.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
I'm going to toss it right over to Jordan because I want him to set up what we're talking about here involving, remember the whistleblower kind of fading in the memory now a little bit? Well, there's a reason for that. And then we find out the whistleblower's lawyer identified the whistleblower. So yes. You can't make this stuff up, but go ahead.
Yes, the whistleblower's own lawyer in their Twitter feed identified the whistleblower by a retweet of someone who put out the whistleblower's name. Put out the retweet. So this, all this crying and, oh, how concerned we need to be about this whistleblower. I mean, that just crumbles as even an argument of tugging at the hearts of people when the lawyer who cares more about his own publicity, obviously, this is like one of these guys who's like obsessed with the articles about him, is tweeting out recklessly the name of his client. And because by retweeting something, it's in his feed.
What exactly did he tweet out?
So he tweeted out someone attacking Seb Gorka, and in Seb Gorka's tweet is the name of the whistleblower. So if you look at the whistleblower's page on Twitter, you see the whistleblower's name.
Is it who we thought?
Yeah. It's the same name that's been around in every article.
Yeah, I mean, this shows you the nature of the
why are people looking at the Twitter account of the whistleblower's lawyer? That's what the big story is. Because in 2017, the same month President Trump took the oath of office, he said a coup has started. Now, a coup, I haven't even done this yet, is defined by the Oxford Dictionary as a sudden, violent, and illegal seizure of power from a government, also known as a coup d'etat. In Black's Law Dictionary, you would go to the definition treason, which is the offense of attempting to overthrow the government of the state to which the offender owes allegiance. In this case, the whistleblower and his attorney are of course, American citizens. So to say a coup has started, he's tweeted that twice. And then he talked about how CNN will play a key role in at real Donald Trump not finishing out his full term. CNN, of course, trying to play this middle-of-the-road news network, when in reality, people like Mark Zaid, who play themselves off as centrist, nonpartisan centrist, predict that CNN, a specific news network, will play a role in the downfall of President Trump. And of course, CNN has literally become a network focused only and specifically, unless there's some other major world event that occurs, it's like the only thing they talk about is negative opinions of Donald Trump. Not negative facts, negative opinions. People that don't like President Trump's style. People that don't like President Trump's policies. That's what CNN is obsessed with. So, I mean, Mark Zaid, I don't think he's that far off there that CNN was pushing this narrative that President Trump wasn't fit for office. But then he tries to defend himself by saying this. The coup comment referred to those working inside the administration. Oh, you mean like a deep state? Who were already just a week into office standing up to him to enforce recognized rules of law. So people who were illegally not following the president's legal orders, as was put forward, as the Supreme Court told all of us in any decision by the Supreme Court, that travel ban, which is where all this started, was absolutely a constitutional exercise of the president's Article 2 power. But again, a coup, he tries to say, is, quote, a completely lawful process. There's no definition of coup that makes it lawful. In fact, as we joked about, the only time you survive a coup is if you win. The leaders of a coup, usually, if the coup fails, are executed. I mean, that's just, if you're really using that term, you know, and you start throwing these terms around as an attorney, and not just as a random attorney, but as an attorney for the guy who got the impeachment ball rolling and then disappeared. You got to question that it's not just some random liberal attorney. This is the guy, the attorney, for the CIA agent or analyst who got the ball rolling on impeachment by working with Adam Schiff, using the word coup dating back to the month the president took the oath of office. They've been working to remove this president since before he even took the oath, and we know it's the deep state actors. It is mid-level CIA agents, former NSA staff. It's no longer a conspiracy theory, folks. They are conspiring, and they have been. We'll be right back. Support the work of the ACLJ during our matching challenge, aclj.org.
Planned Parenthood, the largest abortion business in America, is murdering unborn children and then selling their organs. Federal law bans the sale of aborted babies, but the abortion industry is exploiting a massive loophole. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're demanding Congress investigate Planned Parenthood's gruesome practices and close this abhorrent loophole. And we're taking on Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry in a major trial and in multiple Supreme Court cases. We could not mount this battle without your support. Right now, your gift to the ACLJ will be doubled through our matching challenge. A $20 gift becomes $40. A $50 gift, $100. Stand with the ACLJ now in the fight for life. Online at ACLJ.org. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.org.
Is going on in our world. We've been talking about what's going on in Washington, but I want to digress for a moment here and talk about what else we've got going on. Our team in San Francisco right now is finishing up on the trial involving Planned Parenthood. We're representing a board member of the Center for Medical Progress. That case probably goes to the jury Tuesday or Wednesday of next week. That'll either be week five or week six of that hearing. At the same time, we are preparing. I mean, right now we've got a team of about eight lawyers dealing with the International Criminal Court in The Hague. A major, major case. And Skip, I want to go back to you on this. We've got a lot of people that are new to watching us and listening to us. Our practice at the ACLJ and our European Center for Law and Justice affiliates around the globe engage in human rights issues, law of war, law of armed conflict, defending our military here. What is, again, I want to restate this for everybody. How big of a case is this? It's called In the Matter of the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan.
Yeah, this is significant because this is the first time that a prosecutor of the International Criminal Court is directly including Americans as potential criminals in her investigation. We have had servicemen and women in Afghanistan since shortly after 9/11, and they have been there and they have performed admirably. There have been some allegations of criminal activity, and the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court is trying to haul U.S. men and women in uniform before her court to try them for potential war crimes, potential crimes against humanity, and so forth. This is the first time that that's happened. We are not a member, as the United States, a member of the treaty, and therefore that treaty, that court, should have absolutely no influence over any member, any national of the United States. There is a flaw in the treaty, the Rome Statute that created the ICC, that allows her to do this, and the United States is fighting back. But we are the only ones, UJ will be the only ones standing up for the men and women in uniform at the United States before the appeals chamber at the ICC, and they need to be represented because this is a travesty.
And the United States will not be making an appearance because the United States is not a member of the court. So we will be, I'll be obviously arguing the position in favor of our troops without question. But it's a really big proceeding. It's a very formal proceeding, like the Supreme Court of the United States, very similar. And I'm going to go to Wes Smith on this. Again, Wes, how significant is this as a man? You and Skip served our country honorably and well. But for the men and women fighting for us, how important is it to stay out of this court's jurisdiction?
Yeah, the seriousness of this cannot be overstated. This would impact countless men and women in uniform in the United States to the whims of prosecutors and other countries who are members of the ICC that would haul us before court. I think also, you know, it's important to realize that we're not only not a signatory to this, to the Rome Statute, but in 2001, President George Bush signed the American Service Members Protection Act, which immunizes U.S. troops from any ICC prosecution. And I was really encouraged a few months ago that Mike Pompeo said that any ICC officials who prosecute U.S. troops will not be allowed to enter the United States.
Let me also put on the screen for our television audience and for those watching on Facebook and Periscope, the prosecution, oh, this is paragraph 17 from the allegation against, you'll see it here very clearly, the prosecution also submits information as to the groups allegedly responsible for crimes for which the authorization to investigate is sought. This is coming from the appellate chamber, or the pretrial chamber. The request classifies the categories into three categories, depending on the group allegedly responsible for the crimes. For the purposes of this decision, the chamber will address each of these three categories separately. So here are the three groups that are alleged to commit the crime. Alleged crimes by Taliban and other armed groups. Alleged crimes by Afghan forces. That's number two. Number three, alleged crimes by U.S. forces and the CIA. And Skip, so for people to understand how significant this is, the United States is being lumped in with the Taliban.
Absolutely. We're being, it's as if we are no better than these people who are criminal from their from the roots on up. We are a civilized country. We do the right thing. Our military, our men and women are honorable, and this court has no jurisdiction over our men and women in uniform, and that needs to become clear. We need to state it powerfully. As Wes said, the Congress, in a bipartisan manner, has already passed a statute that says that this won't happen. The problem is that we still have people in the International Criminal Court who are trying to make it happen, so we have to fight them every step of the way.
We're working on that case right now. Your support of the ACLJ allows us to do that, so we thank you for that. Thank you, Skip. Appreciate you being here. All right, let's go right back to the phones. We're going to try to clear some lines up for you, get back to what's happening in Washington. Let's go ahead, Jordan.
Jesus calling in from Texas on line six. Jesus, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, thank you. Thank you, Jay, and thank you, Jordan. Love your broadcast and everything that you're doing for our country. I have a question. So listening to the broadcast about the impeachment inquiry, watching the news, and, you know, everything seems unconstitutional. So I don't have a professional law background, but it just seems that the proceedings continue to go on, even though we know that it's illegal, but it seems like nothing's stopping it. So I'm trying to wrap my head around it to see what's going on in the background.
Impeachment was written into the Constitution as a completely political process. So there are issues that can be raised along the way of, you know, did this violate a specific constitutional right of an individual? But overall, broadly speaking, the House can botch this as much as they want. That's how the Constitution's gave them that power, because it's a great risk to undertake. Because when you're telling the American people, we're going to remove the president that you elected, you're taking a huge risk too as elected officials. So under the rules, under the Constitution, it's very vague. The House makes basically the rules and defines what is impeachable. I was asked on the interview on Fox today, is what if there was this quid pro quo, that everybody loves using this term now, is that illegal? Well, I mean, is it, first of all, no. There's no law that says a president can't say...
National security, foreign policy oftentimes has, we'll do this, you do that, but that's not
even
the president
here. You don't have to have laws in impeachment. Now, you would hope that they would. You'd think that they would, but they don't have to. So there are constitutional issues that can be raised by individuals. They are right now. Executive privilege cases that are going on in court.
Of course, as soon as we do executive privilege, they're going to say we can't participate in the hearing in the judiciary committee.
But there are things to take to court. But overall, this is going to be determined by the House, and if they decide to impeach, then the Senate. What is absurd about this, and the Founding Fathers, I think, knew it, is the political risk and why it's never actually happened. No one's ever been removed from office who has even been impeached. And there's only been two people actually impeached. Neither one of them were convicted in the Senate. They made it almost impossible to do, because it'd be overturning a legal election in the United States. And the Democrats are so desperate that they're doing it literally in the election. We're less than a year out from the election. And this is how desperate they are to damage this president going into an election where they don't have a good candidate yet.
Well, there's some breaking news on the House front on this, and that is that I guess Adam Schiff's office is sending out a detailed questions that witnesses would speak to and asking for Republicans for who their witnesses might be guided, and they point to three issues. I'm going to ask Will to print it for me because it's on my phone. It's hard to read. This is coming from it's out all over the place right now. But, Than, what is your sense, then, on this has just happened, on what this means?
Yeah, I was just trying to read through that myself, Jay. Look, I guess my sense on an overarching vein is they're trying to get Republicans to tip their hand because, again, let's say Republicans answer every question that Adam Schiff has. Let's say they turn over an entire list of who they want to call or even issue a subpoena to. Again, Chairman Schiff, or when it gets to the Judiciary Committee, Chairman Nadler can just veto that. So, Jay, until we have a hard schedule on who they're going to call and when, I really think this is more of trying to get the Republicans on the committee to tip the hand more than anything. And just to underscore something that Jordan said a second ago, Article 1, Section 5 might say that the House can set their own rules for something like this, but it gives the same right to the Senate to set their own rules. And then just to sort of ease Jesus's fear, he's really got the ultimate recourse here, because when these members go back to the ballot box, do they really want to reelect a party that says we can write the rules as we go? I actually think give the American people more credit than that, Jay. I don't think they will want to.
You know, one of the ironies here of this, Wes, I was just thinking about this. We're getting ready to go do a break, so do this quick. But we got an election's less than a year away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to do this, to undo an election when an election is a year away, that which could be the ultimate verdict here.
Right.
Because the president's not going to be convicted in the Senate. It's rather remarkable that they would put the country through this.
Put the country through this and put themselves at political risk. You know, the Senate's not going to remove him from office. I think on the outside hope that they might, I think their fear is that if they don't impeach him and try to remove him, that he will be reelected and this is the only way they can stop it. But they're taking a constitutional provision for impeachment and using that as a guise to overturn an election and to try and overthrow the administration.
It's unreal. All right, we're getting ready to take a break. Last segment, we're going to try to get to all these calls, so hang on the line here. Sharon's got a call about the ICC. We'll get to that. Robert's got a call, Jerry, and Moses. So maybe you should take Moses first. It's Moses. No, I appreciate that. We'll get to that call in a moment, too. We'll get to all these. We'll take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. Get your comments in on Facebook and Periscope as well. Jordan's going to let you know how you could support the work of the ACLJ.
Yeah, you support the work of the ACLJ by donating. And this month, financially, whatever you donate is effectively doubled. We have a matching challenge month in November. We have a group of donors ready to match every donation that comes through. So you donate $30 right now, that's what you're charged on your credit card. But it effectively becomes like $60 to the ACLJ, but you've got to trigger the matching donation. You've got to make the initial donation. Support the work of the ACLJ. Donate online right now at aclj.org. That's aclj.org to donate today.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Planned Parenthood, the largest abortion business in America, is murdering unborn children and then selling their organs. Federal law bans the sale of aborted babies, but the abortion industry is exploiting a massive loophole. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're demanding Congress investigate Planned Parenthood's gruesome practices and close this abhorrent loophole. And we're taking on Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry in a major trial and in multiple Supreme Court cases. We could not mount this battle without your support. Right now, your gift to the ACLJ will be doubled through our matching challenge. A $20 gift becomes $40. A $50 gift, $100. Stand with the ACLJ now in the fight for life. Online at aclj.org.
Last segment of the broadcast, we're going to get right to the phones. Let's go right to them. Let's take the first caller.
Yep. Let's go to Sharon calling from California on line two. Sharon, welcome to JCKO Live.
Hey, Sharon.
Thank you so much for all you do. I am a longtime member and a Blue Star family, and I appreciate that you are standing with our soldiers.
Thank you.
Can you please tell me how we are not members of the International Criminal Court? And because we're not members, how are our soldiers allowed to be tried there?
You are asking that is the question that I am going to address, because the way that the Rome Statute, that's what governs the International Criminal Court in The Hague, is written, they believe that they have the ability to get non-consenting parties, that is, nationals of non-state members, to still have jurisdiction if the crime took place the alleged crime took place in a country where the country is a member. So Afghanistan is a member of the International Criminal Court. They signed on to what's called the Rome Statute. But they also had signed other international agreements with the United States that dealt exactly with this issue of who has jurisdiction over our soldiers. And let me just say this way, I won't give away my argument, but let me tell you what's not there, and that is the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Having said that, that is going to be that's one of the arguments that are going to be raised here, is this overall how this case moves forward and what does it mean for the legitimacy of the court when the reach of it, it could potentially be so significant here.
Yeah, and there's a reason why countries have not joined. Russia is not a signatory. China is not. We are not. And that is because it's perceived as being a violation of the sovereignty of individual nations who have a judicial system that's legitimate. And so that's the reason that so many countries have not joined, including the United States, because of national sovereignty issues. Some countries have actually left the ICC in recent years. I think of Burundi, the Philippines, there are several others who actually left the ICC.
All right, so Than, I just got, and we're going to try to get this posted. Will, tell me when we could let our viewers see it. I just got from, I guess Adam Schiff has put this out to the Republicans regarding potential witnesses regarding three questions. This is, I guess, what the impeachment inquiry is going to focus on. So I'm going to read those in a moment. But what's your reaction to this?
Yeah, well, apparently, Jay, as I read through it, he's trying to narrow what the Republicans can ask, or at least the type of witnesses that he would consider them calling, only ones that can speak to these relevant questions. Of course, Jay, that's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, if you're going to give actual due process to the other side, they should be able to call witnesses that can speak to any number of questions involved in the issue. I will say this, though, Jay, I think the fact that it appears he is giving them a Saturday deadline tells me a couple of things. One, I think he's going to move pretty quickly. I think maybe the next week or two through the House Intel Committee is probably what he's eyeing. And Jay, I guess the other thing is, I think he wants the hat tip from the Republicans, or at least the tipping of their hand, probably so that he can decide whether or not he needs to reject these witnesses. Maybe he'll let one or two through that he thinks is innocent, and then he'll reject the others. But so, that arbitrary deadline, Jay, seems pretty arbitrary to me.
All right, so the question number one is, did the president request that a foreign leader and government initiate investigations to benefit the president's personal political interests in the United States, including investigation related to the president's political rival and potential opponent in the 2020 presidential election? So that, again, Ukraine focus. Number two, did the president directly or through agents seek to use the power of the office of the president and other instruments of the federal government in other ways to apply pressure on the head of state and government of Ukraine to advance the president's personal political interests? Again, this is, again, a focus on Ukraine. And then the third one, which I still think is Ukraine-related, it's going to Number three, did the president and his administration seek to obstruct, suppress, or cover up information to conceal from Congress and the American people evidence about the president's actions and conduct? What I think that's going to get to is that the implementation of executive privilege, they're going to use that as a basis for obstruction of a proceeding as a potential charge.
Adam Schiff has said, like, even today before on Bolton, that him defined the subpoena as evidence of obstruction by the White House,
right?
So by the president, not necessarily. They're trying to play a game of not necessarily John Bolton, who's done anything illegal by exerting privilege, but if the White House, because they exerted privilege. That is an evidence that they will use as an article, as one of the articles of impeachment.
All right.
You go through these questions and you realize this is more of a game.
Yep.
This is not allowing actual due process. But I will tell you one person two people who fit the definition of this, who I don't think Adam Schiff will want to be there. Adam Schiff and the whistleblower.
Right.
We could speak to all three of these points.
Not going to be there.
I don't think he's going to say yes to himself testifying, but he certainly meets the criteria.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and grab another call here. Let's go to Robert.
Yeah, Robert calling in from New York, line 3. Robert, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, Robert, go ahead real quick, please.
I just want to know, why is it that the media, everyone, TV, radio, are allowed to say that he's already committed this impeachment's already done, he's already guilty? I don't hear the word allegedly or anything
because
unbiased.
Because the media is not this is a narrative they're running with. They just want to run with this narrative that this is over with, except when it goes to the Senate, let me tell you what, it will be over with. It will not be convicted if it goes that far. I'm not so sure it does. All right, let's go to the next caller.
Yeah, let's go to Jerry in Pennsylvania, line 4. Jerry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, Jerry, quick, please.
Yeah, okay. Let's say he's impeached and it goes to the Senate and he's cleared there. Could the Democrats in the House get another impeachment going for a second charge?
Well, technically, yes, right? I mean, they could. I mean, it would to put the American, the retribution, I think, of the electorate in the United States would be so overwhelming, they wouldn't do it. But it doesn't stop it.
How many seats in the House of Representatives do they want to have in 2020, Jay?
Right.
Because if it's more than a couple of dozen, I would suggest that be a tack they not go down.
Yeah, I don't. What do you think, Jordan?
I think, listen.
This is going to be it.
Yes, this is it. I really think it's a huge distraction purposefully by Democrats from the actual candidates running for president. Instead they're focusing your attention on Adam Schiff and Ukraine and a bunch of ambassadors no one ever heard of and no one will remember. Okay, and former ambassadors and bureaucrats and mid-level people at the CIA. Again, names that will not even survive into the history books. Because they don't want you focusing in on Joe Biden's weakened campaign, Elizabeth Warren's $52 trillion Medicare for all program, Bernie Sanders getting an endorsement from one of those, from the AOC and the others, and then the other squad member endorsing Elizabeth. They don't want you focusing on a 37-year-old mayor, becoming a potential nominee for the Democrat nomination.
All right, let's take the last call.
Yeah, Moses in New Jersey, line 5.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call, guys. So I'm a former DHS employee and a former Marine as well. And just looking at what's happening just from the outside, when it comes to the legal political battle, you guys are on point. There is no doubt that you're going to come out on top. But where Republicans and the president, where there's weakness, is on the political side, the messaging game. Because the president, he's an effective speaker. He's got the power of a shotgun. But unfortunately, his weakness, he has the accuracy of one as well. And what happens is that when he says something, when he communicates, he's talking about a 6, and the media, what they do, prime time, they report the 9, and they're both looking at the same exact thing. His critics are always able to draw a negative interpretation of what he's saying. So what happens is that when the president, I feel what he needs to educate the American people and expose the Democrats and the mainstream media, he needs to have his best spokesman with him. Like, let's say yourself.
Well, look, here's the way that's worked. I mean, it's already been announced that some folks are coming in to the White House, including former Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi. There are people that will be able to address it. The president's a very effective communicator. But remember, he has to speak at the macro level. Why is that? Because he's the president of the United States. So the surrogates and others will deal with the details of how this goes. Look, we'll see how it all develops next week. Again, let me thank you for watching the broadcast today. There'll be a lot more news coming up in the days ahead. Jordan's going to be on a lot of programs over the next week. I'm going to be probably busy working on these matters. And Jordan will be too, as many other lawyers. I'm just one of many. And again, your support of the ACLJ makes a huge difference. You could do that at aclj.org. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.